I put out a grapevine to see what I could find out about Dooley and to check his story. No one knew anything definitive about him. Tony, the bartender, said Dooley will think if he has to, but he couldn't give me a definite instance. Yes, Nick was known to have talked once, but the facts of the case, in which Dooley was also involved, indicated the tip could just as well have come from Dooley. Several days after the Gene Dooley episode, I was coming out of the subway at Washington Square when a thin blonde kid walked up to me. "Bill," he said, "I guess you don't know who I am. I've been scoring off you through Nick, and I'm tired of having him steal the head off all my caps. Can't you take care of me directly?" I thought, what the hell? After Gene Dooley, why get particular? "Okay, kid," I said. "How many do you want?" He gave me $4. "Let's take a walk," I said, and started toward 6th Avenue. I had two caps in my hand and waited for one of the empty spaces you run into in a city. "Get ready to cop," I said, and dropped the caps into his hands. I made a meet with him for the next day in the Washington Square Bickfords. This blonde kid's name was Chris. I heard from Nick that his folks had money and that he lived on an allowance from home. When I met him the next day in Bickfords, he immediately began to give me the "let me warn you about Nick" routine. "Nick is followed all the time now. You know yourself when a guy is yenning, he doesn't look behind him. He's running. So you see who you picked out to give your address and phone number to." "I know all about that," I said. Chris pretended to be hurt. "Well, I hope you know what you're doing. Now listen, this is not a routine. I'm positively getting a check from my aunt this afternoon. Look at this." He pulled a telegram from his pocket. I glanced at it. There was some vague reference to a check. He went on explaining about the check. As he talked, he kept putting his hand on my arm and gazing earnestly into my face. I felt I could not stand any more of this sweet con. To cut him short, I handed him one cap before he could put it on me for two or three. Next day he showed up with $1.80. He didn't say anything about the check, and so it went. He came up short or not at all. He was always about to get money from his aunt or mother-in-law or somebody. The stories he documented with letters and telegrams. He got to be almost as much of a drag as Gene Dooley. Another prize customer was Marvin, part-time waiter in a village nightclub. He was always unshaved and dirty-looking. He had only one shirt, which he washed every week or so and dried out on the radiator. His final touch was that he wore no socks. I used to deliver stuff to his room, a dirty furnished room in a red brick house on Jane Street. I figured it was better to deliver to his place than to meet him anywhere else. Some people are allergic to junk. One time I delivered a cap to Marvin and he took a shot. I was looking out the window. It is nerve-wracking to watch someone probe for a vein. And when I turned around, I noticed his dropper was full of blood. He had passed out and the blood had run back into the dropper. I called to Nick and he pulled the needle out and slapped Marvin with a wet towel. He came around partly and muttered something. "I guess he's okay," I said. "Let's cut." He looked like a corpse slumped there on the dirty, unmade bed, his limp arm stretched out, a drop of blood slowly gathering at the elbow. As we walked downstairs, Nick told me that Marvin had been after him from my address. "Listen," I said, "if you give it to him, you can find yourself a new connection. One thing I don't need is somebody dying in my apartment." Nick looked hurt. "Of course I won't give him your address." "What about Dooley?" "I don't know how he got the address. I swear I don't."